I'd like to call the special meeting of Ways and Means to order.
Yes, and I'd like to call the special joint meeting of Public Works to order.
Are your mic on?
Mine is. Ah, now it is. I can hear myself up here, though. I would like to call the special joint meeting of Public Works to order. We usually do the pledge and a roll call.
Okay. You can certainly do it if you want.
Okay. Legislator Litz, please lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
All right, first up is our space study presentation. You're all set? There you go. If we can keep it about 40, 45 minutes, and if you people have questions, raise your hand or try to save it till the end. Okay, thank you.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Scott Bova. I am the Director of Architecture at Bergman. We retain.
Could you raise that mic?
I'm sorry. How's that? Is that better?
That's better. Thank you.
We were retained back in January to conduct a space needs assessment of all county-owned and leased buildings. Let me real quick here. So I want to introduce you a little bit to our format and the report we're going to go through today. This is essentially divided into sections. We commenced this project by first having assessments with, kickoff meetings before our assessments. We provided questionnaires. We also went through interviews with key staff members. Bless you. And then we also walked through the facilities, recorded conditions, and then we produced a report. So this is essentially the report. Section zero is an executive summary. The executive summary more or less explains the process and what we did for you all for this project. Pretty much matches the outline of the RFP. We also provided some findings in the summary report as well. We figured there was an opportunity to highlight some areas. Section one is going to highlight the building conditions. That's all the physical characteristics of the buildings, the building systems, and any improvement priorities that we established. Section two of the report is going to outline the physical space needs. These are the interior space and office space needs. They're going to include an overview, commentary on the space utilization, space considerations and recommendations. And then section three takes that information and summarizes a two programs, a capital improvement program as well as a preventive maintenance program. So let me start a little bit. I want to start. Sign off. Might start off here. So our process started again back in January when we were originally retained. We commenced our offerings by attending a kickoff meeting, and that kickoff meeting was an opportunity to get to know the players. We also provided a schedule and a game plan on how we were going to initiate this process. The assessment phase. That's the phase that commenced after the kickoff meeting. We walked through all the facilities. Again, we went through all departments. These are 24 departments and 34 spaces. That's county owned and leased. We also reviewed 14 county owned buildings for the building conditions and the building systems assessment. And all this work was provided by qualified architects and engineers familiar with those building types. The documentation phase was essentially our report. So that's where, after we collected all the information and gathered the information from the departments and analyzed, we provided a graphic and illustrative documentation of our findings. So section three will outline that. So if I go real brief into the executive summary, if you haven't, anybody had an opportunity to view this. This is, again, where we went through our 32 departments. We went through this with a multidisciplinary team of architects and engineers. The goal here was essentially to go through all your spaces. We sent questionnaires, we retrieved the information and organized it into a building program. We made comments to the physical building conditions and the conditions of the spaces, and then we provided any improvement input that we thought was pertinent. The finding summary, again, this was an opportunity for us to highlight a few areas that were called out in the RFP that didn't necessarily fit anywhere else in the report. Here we itemized a few special areas. We talked about potential relocation and consolidation opportunities where departments can consolidate. And buildings could be either the goal here was to get all county-leased departments into county-owned facilities. We also identified other space types. These would be non-office space types that were identified in the surveys and in our review. We had a commentary on net zero energy alternatives. We understand that a strong agenda for the county, so we wanted to acknowledge where building systems could be replaced and if they were replaced with what. And then you'll have a little bit of a section here for your space utilization. We organized all these spaces as either overutilized, appropriately utilized, or underutilized. So all that will be documented per space. Okay, so section one, this is where we kicked off our assessment study of the building conditions. 14 county-owned buildings that we assessed. This was essentially organized in a way where we would collect this information with our architects and engineers on the site. They would walk around the outside of the buildings and inside the buildings and basically provide a commentary to the physical building conditions. Okay, so this is separate from the physical office spaces. We provided, here's a map. You'll see that I think 13 of the 14 buildings are in Kingston. And we have one facility that's in Ellenville. So again, 40 county-owned buildings. In this section, we'll be providing building descriptions in the reports. We also have commentary to the envelope. That would be the exterior walls, foundations, if they're visible. The building systems, that would be the mechanical, electrical, plumbing, fire protection, and fire alarm. And we also provided some improvement and priorities of those improvements. So this, we decided to take an example of one of our reports, just to highlight here quickly so you can see not just the categories, but also some kind of visual. This is, the narrative section is where we really collect this information and organize it, so it's easy and clear and easy for you to use later. And this is a living, breathing document, okay? So this is taken at the time of our assessments, so we would expect in the future that this can be updated. So we started at every building with a building description. In the building description, we highlighted the construction, the age of the building and the year it was originally built and or any additions. The building type, that would be typically the building construction type. The building size and location. If you have buildings with multiple departments, we also highlighted all the departments are in the building. Again, here is Fair Street, so obviously we have multiple departments that we listed in this section. And then as we progress through to the assessment, we're going to focus on the physical building in this section. So that includes the building enclosure system, windows and doors, building entrances, that would be both staff and public entrances. And that would also include accessibility. The roof system, the vertical circulation, that can be stairs and or elevators, and accessibility for both building and site. Parking areas where they were provided or their on-site parking, and you know, at least some kind of commentary or assumption of what hazardous materials may be present in these buildings, so you have some idea that there's maybe some other materials to contend with it, any building project.
Are we holding our questions to the end?
If you want to now, or you can wait.
You give me a break. I appreciate it.
Any assessment of transportation to the buildings, public transportation, how they're accessible to
Yeah, we did not include public transportation. We focused the building condition on the physical building site.
Okay.
So if there was on-site parking, we accommodated that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But not
but nothing off-site.
Okay. Right.
Or parking lots that were off-site.
Right. Thanks.
Okay, so the other half of building conditions, aside from the physical shell and exterior condition of the building, we also assessed with our mechanical, electrical, and plumbing engineers their systems. So in mechanicals, you're going to routinely see heating and cooling, such in commentary to that. If and when there were ventilation, we included that. Plumbing and water, that would include fire protection if there's sprinkler systems, a mag sprinkler system, and some notion of gas service as well. On the electrical side, we did building power, building service power, lighting, IT, telecom, and then security. Mm-hmm. And in security, we kept security to security systems. We did not include any commentary into the building intrusion system. That's usually monitored separately, but if there was a security system, we acknowledged that. And then fire protection, fire alarm, and again, if there was sprinkler tie into that, we'd make comments to that. So through most of this section, we proceeded by doing the narrative, and then we provided photo documentation of each of the components. And throughout the commentary, you'll note figures, and in those figures, there are references to these photos. So it's fairly easy for you to find not just the commentary, but the corresponding photo. At the end of the section, we started developing some priorities to what we thought could be building improvements. Not necessarily categorize them yet as capital improvement projects or preventive maintenance, but at least outlining potential projects and then with an urgency, priority, and routine that's kind of like high demand, medium care, and routine would be more maintenance.
Can I ask another question?
Absolutely. Sure.
Do you look at carbon neutral goals at all?
Yeah, so in the mechanical and the HVAC, so what we didn't do, because we're not doing any design in this phase, we're acknowledging that there's building systems to be replaced. And their usefulness, their life expectancy and usefulness at this point was mentioned. In the executive summary, you'll see there's a commentary as to how and when rooftop units and air handling units are replaced. They can be feasibly replaced with heat pumps, with electric coil backups, and then the idea is if you provided that, you can do the same thing with your central heating and your ventilation systems. Now, the one caveat to all this, I mean, the one suggestion that we made in a lot of these buildings that had a hot water system. Hot water is more difficult to replace with a alternative carbon-free net zero solution. Essentially, it's difficult to get the water to 180 degrees in order to properly function. So in our commentary, we've suggested that you may need more area of radiation if you're going to use those systems. So although we didn't design anything and didn't call anything out specifically for the building, there is mention to what units have met their usefulness, life usefulness, and then what are candidates for replacements, okay? And we think all your systems can be replaced. It's just a matter of, can people come out of the buildings? Can you gain access to the spaces and do that work, right?
So is this something we could do a follow-up with you? So
oh, absolutely.
Go through and say, okay, we really want to get from here to there. This is what you can do here. This is what you can do there.
That's typically what we do, right? We do the assessment first. You see the layout, right? You understand the obstacles and the opportunities. And then once we identify those and help you prioritize those, the goal is we'd like to come back and actually help you facilitate those changes.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions about building conditions? So building conditions, again, we're focused on the outside of the building, the envelope, and the building systems, the mechanical, electrical component, and electrical plumbing.
So section 2 gets us into what really the title of this RFP is, the space needs assessment, and the space needs we have 24 departments that responded to our surveys. The 34 spaces that we walked through, many of the departments had multiple sites and multiple spaces, so we accounted for those as well. So I'll provide an example here. We highlighted here in the health department. This hit a little bit of everything. And so again, we started each section with an overview, and that would be the location, the size, the functions of the departments, the physical address, and multiple addresses we listed as well. And then in the space utilization themselves, we broke it into several components. Some of these came from you and some of those were our comments, but space benefits, space limitations, those are typically items that we recognize, but we also took your department comments from your surveys and provided some commentary to either their utilization, their optimization of their space, and where the gaps were. So again, we see a lot of areas where there's, yes, physical space needed for more office, but we also acknowledge non-office spaces in the form of meeting rooms, storage for sure, a lot of storage needs. And then we compile that and organize that again, make a suggestion. Now, the commentary here is basically, again, very much like section one. We identified an area, a need, and we provided photos so you can match up those photos so you have some kind of graphic representation of that. And then we took this a step further with these space needs assessments. We identified building plans that the county offered to us, your existing layout, your current configurations, as well as suggestions as to where you can gain space. So if we thought there was an opportunity to consolidate space, move somebody, on the right-hand side there where it's all red, those are seven highlighted items that we identified through our assessment and through the questionnaires and interviews of opportunities where you can gain space or make changes. Now again, this will be for each space will provide this input, will provide this input for each space, not just each department. And then the admin section too, we thought it would probably be easy to help you identify a summary of space utilization by department. So if you weren't going to go back and want to read that whole commentary or you didn't have time to look at the graphics and the narratives, you can come here to this, I'll call it a cheat sheet, how each department utilizes space. Again, it's going to have some location comment, some use, a space commentary, your current capacity as we see it. So we understand that this is somewhat subjective, but when we itemize things as overutilized, appropriately utilized, or underutilized, it's with standards that we identify as office space standards for square foot per occupant, and that can be a combination of staff who are in offices, that can be staff in open areas, that can include circulation in all your net areas, and all your shared spaces. So we attempted to take a column in this section and provide additional space need. So right there you see square footage for our calculation of what physical space need we see at this time. And then consideration. So we want to make sure we can hopefully offer you a couple suggestions on how you can make those improvements, not just identify them. We get short of any design. Okay, so all we're trying to do is show you where the gaps are and where we think we can fill them. So section three essentially takes section one, which is our building conditions. And then if you recall I had these priorities, urgent, priority, and change sections. Here we attempted to organize those, group them into both capital projects and preventative maintenance rehabilitation projects. In this case, we did it per building, so these are all your county-owned buildings documented in this section. We also included a timeline suggestion. If we identify something as urgent, typically saw that as something that would be 0 to 3 years. If it was a priority, we would say be up to 5 to 6. And if it was routine and more maintenance-related, it could be as many as 10 years. But we attempted here to take all your buildings and projects, overlay them with some kind of urgency of when the project should be produced, accommodated. And then, again, the idea is start giving you an outline to what could be a capital project versus a maintenance project. And all, I think we identified, this is a nice summary of all that. We identified what we perceive could be up to 34 capital improvement projects, again, across 14 buildings, and up to 41 maintenance projects in those same buildings. So a total of 75 projects is what we've identified through this assessment. Okay, we want to take a little time. Any questions on either the building conditions or the space needs assessment?
I had a quick question about the density of the buildings in Kingston. And I'm just wondering about how we serve the public, and does that jive? That we've got this big density in the center in Kingston, we don't have much of an outer areas. Do you look at that kind of thing at all?
Yeah, well, actually, you'll see from this report, we're going to review this report by tomorrow a little bit. You'll see a little bit about all the valuable available space in Kingston County and in four sub-regions that we studied. Okay. There definitely is a concentration in Kingston, for sure. Mm-hmm. You're going to see in that report, and I'll share with you, but not just the quantity of spaces between office and storage facilities, but also the size. And right now, we're in a little bit of a strange period. After COVID, we identified two things that jumped out at us. In 2017, we noticed that there was a very high vacancy in this area. 2018, it almost went to zero. It's been pretty flat since. A lot of states, a lot of cities your size have actually experienced vacancy just because a lot of people haven't returned to the workplace and they're still in the back. In your case, is that you have a very small pool of spaces that are available to you. That has not changed. So again, with the concentration in Kingston for particularly for office space, and actually I'll say the same is true for storage at this point. We could not find a space suitable for some of your larger departments if they were to be moved or consolidated at this time. So we acknowledge that as well. But the important thing is that now you have a list of all those properties. So going back on a routine basis and asking or identifying projects that are sites of interest, you can go back to, and Des Moines is available to go back and update this information as well. But I think it's going to be a very useful tool for you going forward. If you're looking outside the area, again, it just comes down to availability. It just doesn't exist, right? So I'll show you that illustration and then if I can get through that slide. Right? Thank you.
Quick question. So on the classification of the project significance, you have urgent, priority, and I guess routine.
Yeah.
So are any of the urgent ones, because I'm specifically thinking about 25 South Manor, is that an unsafe building at this point?
No, it's safe to be occupied. It's a safe building to be occupied, we feel, at this point. Not ideal. Okay, there's the areas that if you're going to do anything in the next 3 years, it would benefit. We do. I saw the report, I believe, on some of the masonry repairs. Again, the building's not falling down. So no one needs to evacuate that building. But when you see the cracking, it's a sign that there's loading, there's stress in the building. It's not going to be it's certainly not a 20-year solution, right? But in terms of having to run out of there today, I would say no. The building was also built in different times, right? Different conditions. And that was very apparent. I mean, we could tell by the construction site that there were where the building was built originally to where it was added on to. The use of the building, right, for IT, right? IT is quite a sensitive item, right? So, in my opinion, it's more an issue of the user sensitivity and a sensitivity about the building and the building structure. Okay? When we notice the masonry cracks, when we see the loading in that roof, you know, there are certainly signals, and, you know, we do want to repair those if you're going to on a kind of long-term basis. But in our report, we identified that building is actually about a department that we thought to be relocated, consolidated in other spaces, and therefore get that building off the bus.
Right.
Rather than just to get them up. Once you want to read about it, it's in here. I just won't go into depth.
No, I got it. I got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. A couple things. The bullet points that you had in your conditions assessment and then the space needs assessment, can we get I know that they're in there for each building, but can we get just those slides somehow?
Say one more time, the building.
So as you were explaining, you gave like these in a building condition assessment at this building. You were going through the bullet points there, like these are the things you looked at. I know that they're included in each of the spaces, but could we just have access to either the list of those or even the slides that you just presented? It just be easier for me to understand.
Yeah. So I brought an example of the apartment. This is 260 pages. There's another 230 page document here as well. So each apartment is identified in there by the building. Now, I don't have a slide in every format, but what we did is just provided representational, right, images just to show, just to explain the process and explain what included. I'd be happy to share this with you. I mean, there's an electronic version of it. So if you want the electronic version, Robert can send it to you as well. If you want to print it again, it's probably about 600 page document and all. So if you can't sleep at night, that'll help. Yeah, absolutely.
I was noting that I didn't see consumer fraud, which is under the DA's office, but physically located at the sheriff's department. And I did not see the youth bureau, which is at the DFS building. And we do have people there. Were they intentionally left out, or?
So the assessments we provided were questionnaires. Surveys, we sent out questionnaires at the beginning. We produce these questionnaires, send them out to all the departments. We receive questionnaires back in various departments for the intention of interviewing staff in each department, as well as physically walking through their spaces with them. So we think that was very beneficial. If we didn't receive the survey back, or we attempted, like we're still attempting to get that back, they did not make this report. They're not in this report. I think I said that. I think there were 24 departments that responded in 34 physical spaces. That's welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Building off that last question, would it be reasonably simple for your firm, let's say, some of these spaces that we didn't ask you to cover, like the UCAT building, Fairgrounds, City Ulster, and Kingston, to add those on and do the same methodology and just have like a smaller product, quicker turnaround time?
I think it's possible, right? So what we did is we took the projects that were identified in our
street,
the departments that were identified in the RFP. There were two or three in the RFP that we didn't provide as a result of not having all the four or five questions returned. There's other county projects, it would really be outside the scope of work, but I can provide any of the additional service.
The focus of this assessment was primarily on office space. So, we can't really accommodate fairgrounds, really candidate the candidates we want to keep costs down. So that's why they weren't included. But we can certainly come up with a list of additional buildings and assessment programs.
I mean, to Robert's point, during our interview, they asked, I acknowledge that we had a fair amount of experience with EPW facilities. So he identified 11 EPW facilities and asked if we would include those at the time of our RFP, right? The time of the
interview.
Right, but at the time of the interview. Right. So we basically responded to the RFP as well. Thank you.
So just to follow on that, so does that mean you didn't include the DPW facility? They were identified during the interview, but did you end up including them, or did you not?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good. All right, so I guess to the point, I'm disappointed to hear that there were departments that didn't respond and that then were therefore just not included. That seems like a failure on our side, not the legislature, but I mean on the county side. I don't know what extent there was follow-up to from your end and from our end, but I think, one, I'd like to know all the departments that aren't included, that did not respond. I think we'd like to I'd like that provided to the legislature. I don't know if that would come from you or from DBW. Maybe I should just stop there and just ask for a response. I don't know if it would be from you or if it would be from DBW, or if you have that list right here.
Sure. So, we did not do a walkthrough of, for example, this county historian, because they're literally in our building. They occupy one space and the part-time director. So you might see that at the department, but you won't see them in the survey.
But what else is included when you say 20, you have 24 responses? How many did not respond?
We can go back and look at those numbers, because consumer fraud, it used to be a standalone department. It's no longer standalone. It's now within the sheriff, within the DA's office, but it's in the jail.
Right, and the charter revision is going to be even removed as a division period. But I guess what I'm wondering is there departments that did not respond that actually make more of a difference than the two that you identified? Because I don't know what's not here. I haven't cross-referenced these departments.
I don't believe so.
Do you have a list of who hasn't responded?
I don't have an on me, but I recently provided
to you. Roughly how many departments do you feel it was?
Two or three.
I did not see them in the list under the CSS building. Yeah. But that was just a quick glance.
Okay.
And I guess the DA's office should have included consumer fraud.
And they may have. They may have it too.
And can we go back to Lister Earner's question about these sort of anomaly spaces like UCAD or the fairgrounds? How many of those are not in this report? Just because we've had interesting conversations about the fairgrounds. So it'd be good to have a little bit more about sort of what are all the potential assets that we have.
So that's a really good question. The report does not include any sheriff substation. Does not include parks. Doesn't include any non-office space, really. We really want to drill down. Doesn't include any easements, like there's an ongoing issue right now with easements and, property that were just abandoned, basically, that we don't know about. So it really only had to do with office space.
So I think it would be interesting, even if we don't do a huge drill down into each of these spaces, to at least have a list of all the assets and just a comprehensive understanding of what's in our world. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, to follow on that, not to recreate the wheel, I would say that internally we could send a very similar questionnaire to, if there are departments or divisions utilizing those spaces, we could send a very similar questionnaire to those divisions from your office, just to gather back the information. But what Mr. Criswell is asking for is definitely something I'd want to see, just in a single place, some accounting of all county space. The easements, I understand, are very complicated, that I get, but the rest, what is the rest of the space where you think, because if we're thinking holistically, you actually, I think, have to potentially sometimes step outside the box and say, well, this is an office space, but it is our space, so maybe that's the place we could build something, or maybe that's the place we could rethink something. So I would definitely want, and that doesn't necessarily mean we need to do a whole other study into that. I think we start by just including it as an internal addendum to this.
Well, I was going to follow on the follow-on, and I would prefer, if it's possible, and I understand, there's a product of work here, but I would like this list of additional things that were not addressed to be included as an appendix, in this document, because this will be the document we'll look to when we have those questions. So if that's possible and doesn't, you know, cause any real difficulty, that to me that is the best place to work.
Yeah, and I'll say, you know, it's sort of, you know, discouraging that some of these spaces are not included, like we just mentioned the shared substation, for example, we're leasing space from the town of Warsaw. I don't know what we're paying for it, but we have a county-owned building in Ellenville. The idea in my mind when we had this study done, that we'd be able to look at spaces that we own, places that we're leasing, and try to see if we can merge them together into places that we own so we stop leasing space. So I think we need more square footage for these actually have than what we need.
And is this one of the reasons that the space study needed to be extended, because we weren't hearing back from departments on the survey so we could address needs?
There were other issues.
There were other issues as well?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that was one. Don't forget, Chair, when you talk about from start to finish, we're here today, late October, that started in January.
January.
We had to develop, surveys, send them out, get back, schedule walkthroughs, meet with each department. It was a long process, and it was a very drawn out process. They got bought, Bergman got bought out by another company, so we had to go and amend the contract because their billing address changed. And now, unfortunately, our financial system is set up in a way where we can't make payments to for a different address. So, I'm kind of proud at this. It's been an ongoing issue for many years. In fact, back in the early 2000s, there was a standing committee of the legislature called the Space Committee. And it is our CPW's attempt at taking a stab at it. We've identified capital projects and also preventative maintenance measures. We did review the RFP. We reviewed all of the locations and the buildings, and those are the buildings that were decided to move forward with. So, if anything, my fault that we didn't include the sheriff's substation, we didn't include the parks, but this was more of a drill down on office space.
Yeah, and I'll add that I thought the results of the questionnaire and the input we received, as well as the interviews that we did and the walkthroughs, we received a lot of information, much more information than we originally we would normally assume. That's a very good sign. I thought the top letter staff were very engaged, very open and willing to share information. We wanted to document all that. It just took us more visits, I think I had originally scheduled maybe two or three three-day visits, and we ended up making six. Generally because we had to spend more time with your staff, and they were open and willing to share, so we kept coming back, crossing T's, dotting I's. We also have progress meetings with Robert along the way. We want to show we did those right before we proceeded to the next step. I thought everything we did was very responsible and comprehensive.
I'd like to just say I really appreciate the work here, and I think this is great. And I think that this is something that we can use as a tool moving forward so that we don't get into problems like we've gotten into with Elizabeth Manor. If we could go in at the very front and do a deep dive assessment of the property, we'd have a much better understanding of where we're going to end up. So I appreciate that, and I hope that we can do this moving forward.
Maybe this is a good time for me to ask one other question I have, and it wasn't part of the study, but you've just done this work, so you may know. We want to place some nursing stations, and I've been seeing them as I've been traveling, that they're modular or type of things, almost like a trailer that we can put someplace, but you've just been looking at all the sites. If you saw any good places for something like that besides the something else that we may do to be, you know, right next to where people work. Just thought it'd be a good time to ask the question.
Yeah, if you do review our Section 2 utilization summary, you'll see areas that are underutilized, right? So I think the important thing to do is if you identify spaces that are potentially underutilized, there's only a few, but most of you are either appropriately utilized or overutilized. I would say about a third of your spaces are probably overutilized. And you're making best use of that space. I mean, I think people have been very creative the way they use their office. But on the flip side of that, there's some of these departments have very strict requirements, in privacy, access to the site. We attempted to at least identify those, but you'll have just like a little bit of information to add on to this. But again, I think, you know, to what was suggested earlier, this is really a good starting point. This is good documentation. This is a living, breathing document. We assume you'll continue to utilize this and add to our technical and any kind of plan for this. I did want to offer this real quick because I know the question came up a little earlier. Des Moines, they're a market analysis specialist, and there's a piece of RFP, and we took it very seriously. We thought it was very important for you to have this. We went into much more detail than I initially suggested we would do by RFP, but it really took off and it really was helpful. So there were four regions in the county that were identified in the RFP, so we tried to itemize those for both office and stores needs. And Des Moines went through all these and identified all the areas that are actually available, the areas that are that exist with between 2017 and this between 2017 and 2023 today. Again, you'll get information here about the total square footage available. And this, again, this first one you just saw was the space, but there's also owned spaces. Inventory, vacancy, the vacancy percentage, gross rate, gross rent rates. So I think that's one that they have. And then you'll see a little bit, I thought this was very common, the annual change in gross rents. Again, you'll see kind of 2020 when COVID hit, how much that's changed and how flat it has been since. But I would also suggest, so this is the same thing for available lease spaces, Class A and Class C. You have no Class A buildings in Ulster County, everything is either B or C here. So again, all these properties are itemized. I'll just jump through these a little bit faster, because I'm just going to tell you the same thing. Storage is very, very telling to us. A lot of storage is on 80, we're off 87. They're in areas where they're very easy accessible to the freeway. They provided those for up to 8,000 square feet and 50 to 100,000 square feet. And this was the pattern we saw in a lot of spaces, that storage, nobody has enough storage. And I've never been accused of denying something with too much storage. It just doesn't happen. If you have storage, it'll get used. But we want to at least identify for you where that exists. And if you see here, it's very limited right now. So again, the challenge is if you don't build it, if you're looking for it, it's kind of a unicorn right now. If it comes up, you know, think about it, jumping on it. Well, I want to get all the way through this a little bit. A lot of this is the same, just in different regions. So we can identify four regions part of the RFP. But at the very end of this document, okay, so here's a list of all the office space that's available. It's a pretty good sign that it looks like a lot of spaces, but if you start looking at the available square footage, they're relatively small. I mean, with the exception of one space there, a lot of these spaces won't meet your program requirements. And then the last thing, I'll go to the very end. Oh, sorry, let me highlight this, because this was also an RFP. There was the suggestion that we would look for a place for the DA and the public center within a proximity to the courthouse. There are only a few spaces that were even up for lease. But again, when we did this 0.3 mile radius, we identified, there's one building that's for sale for $7 million, which is still not within walking distance. So again,
very limited to what's actually available, to what actually exists right now. Same thing, so if you go outside the county, it's possible to do it at all. We also looked at the city of Kingston because we understood there was a need potentially to relocate for the Board of Elections, right? That would be the city limits.
The Board of Elections, this district attorney's office, the legislature.
Legislature. I apologize.
So there are a few departments that require to be in the city of Kingston limits. Board of Elections is one, district attorney is another. The legislature, I believe.
So our report does suggest two buildings that are currently leased, where if we could get them into county-owned facilities, I think we identified two buildings in our report that if we consolidated, relocated, and with some kind of renovation project, we know people would be moving around, but I think Gold Hill was a candidate for building that could be renovated. We know mental health is moving out. We talked about the health department possibly relocating or partly relocating during renovations. The idea is that building is large enough to bring other departments in. That could be IS, right, some of the IS. We certainly felt like that could be another department that was relocating. That's not relocating the employment training.
New IA7 lease.
The new IA7 lease opens up a lot of space over it. Which is so it's wonderful. Let's move the health department to that building. My voice is blank. While Stolen Hill is being renovated.
So that's two departments in our county lease condition that would be relocated into a public county home building, right?
Yeah, and this survey, or this question just came up. It wasn't part of Bergman's analysis in detail, really, because it's a new piece. So we didn't have a lot of chance, a lot of time to dive into it.
If I could, I'm directing this at Deputy Director Perry, but I didn't know that there were some, like in 2024, there'd be 10 extra jobs or 6 extra jobs, and it's my understanding those were on the draft budget request from the departments. Is that why it was carried in? I think one was Public Works and one was the Health Department.
So the assessment, the surveys were conducted not during budget time. So they were conducted during January.
So, but this was put in by the department heads as a
where they're designated.
Oh, okay.
But it was not part of the budget, county budget.
Okay.
The last thing I read in this report is that at the very end here, there's an attachment for all office departments in Washington County. So, again, the address is square footage, locations, ideal conditions. I will go back and look at this. You know, we'll talk this morning a little bit about thinking outside the box a little bit, particularly when it came to sensitive locations like walking distance, what is walking distance and all that. But in the end, you know, because there's not available space currently, a little flexibility on the box, I think it goes a long way. You have to go back and dive back into these things. This is just multiple times a year. And opportunities do come up, and I think once it's known that there's a need or an RFP goes out for a need, you'd be surprised what does also come up. I know we've seen this in a couple of other properties we've reviewed. Looking forward to the idea of taking this information, again, this report needs to, if I'm going to summarize this report from how we started this, thinking more about office spaces, and it is an office space assessment, but when you're talking about net zero solutions, and you're talking about buildings that you want to maintain over years, you look at it holistically. You look at not just, I know it's a convenient to always look at the building equipment. If we're going to replace HVAC, we're going to get more efficient equipment. At the same time, you have to look at the building envelope. They go together, right? You're not going to create a condition where the building's leaking like a sieve and you got brand new equipment. They have to work together. So in the future, when you do study this, the nice thing I like about the building condition assessment is that you get a very good inventory of the building and all the components of the building. So when you do design the systems in the future, you make the decision that, hey, it makes sense to replace the windows at the same time. You replace, put more insulation on the roof. If we're going to redo the roof and do new units, then do those projects together, right? Just interrupt the building once. Those are the kinds of things that you want to think about as you're using this document. There's no single roadmap to this, but if you are thinking about projects in the future, talk to architects, engineers, interior designers, the market analysis specialists, we can come back together and make those suggestions for you. And that's what those capital improvement projects suggest. Okay, those are viable solutions, we feel. Without doing the design work up front, right? But the priorities are important too, because I think that helps you think about, hey, these are projects that we can have to do in the next 5 years.
Quick question. The top of your presentation, you said that there were 34 spaces that you analyzed, owned, and leased.
Office spaces.
So I'm just trying to understand, I don't see that listed out. I'm looking at each of the locations and it either says primary location or secondary location. Does that mean owned or leased? Like where's the list of what we own?
So section two, which is 24 departments,
uh-huh.
32 physical spaces that we walk through.
How can I tell if it's owned space or if it's leased space by a department?
You will say in the summary if it's owned or leased, right? So you know.
I'm looking at Office of the Agent right now. So where does it say whether this is an owned location?
So usually in the overview, the very first paragraph in the overview, in every one of these, we just have items.
Okay, in parentheses.
Yes.
Owned by
others. Yeah.
Is there a way to get just a straight-up list?
So
that would be way easier.
Different ways to carve this up.
True. That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you. I got a real quick question. So you said the county doesn't have any Class A properties. Would you mind giving us a brief overview of the distinction between Class A, B, and C? And to save some time, is there a need for Class A buildings for the county now?
Yeah, I'm going to shoot my hip a little bit on this one because that's not my area.
We're used to that in this
Class A are really high-end corporate kind of offices, right? So if you were designing an office for a big corporate intended to show up here, thinking about they would certainly design a Class A, high-end, lots of amenities, right? Class B is kind of your average urban seating type of office space, but and suburban. They're basically nice finishes, quality construction. Class C is kind of like a notch down, right? So, and maybe older buildings that don't meet all the building department, building code requirements or energy code requirements, those would probably be more updated, right? If you're going to consider Class C buildings, you might have a larger investment if you want to repurpose those buildings. So A is kind of walk-in, high-end, corporate. B is kind of walk-in, feels about, I'm going to say 95% of your buildings are probably Class B.
Very small.
That's really what I want to find out.
Thanks. And on the Office of Storage interview, there's these four regions. Can you explain what the difference is among them and see where they are and how that's all decided? Yeah, those were identified in the RFP. We responded to the RFP. I think they were itemized into corridors. I think there was the 87 corridor in Kingston. And then I think there were the southern region.
84.
I thought it was by town, right? The regions that we figured out.
Yeah, they were identified groups by townships.
By townships. So we just basically took the regions and the towns that were identified in the request for proposal, and we responded to that. So basically, we just meet the requirements
I'm assuming, you know, the 87.
Yeah, they were categorized with some type of rationale.
Can you tell us briefly what that rationale is?
Well, you know, basically, like when you do redistricting, when you redistrict and you move with legislative districts, you try to meet communities that are common, right, that are even all contiguous and following a similar travel path, you know, transportation route. So that's really the only basic criteria.
If you look at it from a geography, it looks very much like it's an I-87 corridor, the north, western, central county, the southern part of the county. Basically, it's I have a copy of that. I mean, it's an RFP. I have a copy of RFP. I don't know if it's a hard copy. But again, is that something you want to see? We can provide that. Which I think it was by, you identified the town and we have to present the answer.
So, quick question, man. In your analysis, when you look at the department space utilization and you have the categories of overutilized, appropriate, underutilized, is there a space then where you give us some suggestions for taking the overutilized and reducing it down and placing it into certain underutilized ones to give us a whole balanced view of this whole profile?
So, where we identify overutilized, we suggest there's a space needed. Mm-hmm. You need more space.
Right.
And the goal was, if we divide space and you can see it in a graphical representation of section 2, mm-hmm. we try to make space more continuous for their existing spaces. Because everyone wants, they have, there's a department that needs that meeting room, they want to walk up a call or a different floor, they might be continuous, so we try to find that first. Mm-hmm. The square footage we provided, again, was the notion of office space, open office, private office, circulation. And then again, we identify, I will say, at least half your departments need the meeting space. If they have meeting space, they want any more. And or they have times when they have larger meetings. And currently, they have to leave either building for a larger meeting or they have to share another space a lot of times. So if we could afford that and indicate that, we showed it graphically where we thought that space would be, so you will see that documented, not just language, but we will show a suggestion. One suggestion we had was, just comes to my mind, veterans, space next to them, I think, was economic development.
Yeah.
And we heard that they need to be relocating. Well, their spaces, their storage spaces are very scattered. And the break area also serves as an office for 1 to 3 right now. So we found that as a very optimal way to say, okay, we're going to show that graph. There's something gained there. But we also thought about IS coming over, so that's an opportunity for them to gain some of that space. So we just kept noting these things.
I do.
We made those considerations.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
So for the overutilized, you give the square footage that you think is overutilized, and for the underutilized.
No, I'm sorry. Overutilized, you need additional square footage.
You need it. Okay, got it. But for the underutilized, you don't identify how much space is underutilized. That to me would be helpful if we could see a number of, X thousand square feet underutilized that we could then say, oh, look, we've got this need over here on this side, maybe we could, match it up with something that equals it on the other side.
Yeah,
I know that might be hard.
It is.
I know.
It's not plug and go, but you're right. So what I did with the underutilized, by the way, I think there are only 4 underutilized markets at all. They're not so much underutilized as their physical space, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't need it or they don't need it. Okay, so at least currently, it's underutilized. I'm going to give you a perfect example. When I saw it, was the first one we visited, it was tourism. Tourism took, I believe, purchasing space much larger than they needed. Doesn't necessarily mean someone else should move in there. Doesn't mean necessarily a better person for that or a better entire department to sit there. But then we saw things like tourism. They maintain a separate storage facility for a lot of their material and a lot of brochures and whatnot. And so, even though you're underutilized, if you went to any kind of design and they were going to stay the same design exercise, you can suggest how they could utilize that better. So it doesn't always necessarily mean put them all in various places that's unutilized. It's just, I think you have to go through a program or session with each department.
Thank you.
And we did try to attempt to either take both a 5-year and where possible a 10-year projection to what growth would be for these departments. We thought that was important because designing something for a very short-term need, if we thought there was going to be a lot of hiring in the 5-year range, and they're appropriately sized today, they're going to very quickly be overutilized. So we want to consider that as well.
One last question. So is there a specific department or area that you feel, based on the study at this point, that we should be addressing right away? In other words, they're way overcrowded or have way too much space. Is there something that's very glaring that we should focus on right away? Well, because we're going through capital projects for the next calendar year, it'd probably be a good time if there's something we should be addressing right away.
So section 3, we identified 34 potential capital improvement projects, and we did these five buildings. If you look in there, you'll see some buildings with 3 or 4 or 5 main suggestions, right? So I would start with that. It makes sense to do projects. If you're going to interrupt the building, do the projects as much as you can together. It's like if you did something in your home. If you did a kitchen 1 year and a bathroom next year, and your roof next year, for all these little mini projects, you pay a lot more, right? So you might want to consider it based on the number of projects. I would also look at this project significant. I can identify this as urgent, so going through your urgents first. The biggest bang for your buck would be this type of building, right? This building touches a lot of departments. But there's also the obstacle of relocating a lot of people potentially, or displacing people for a time while work is being done. So you have to consider some phasing in that too, right? I think IS is a candidate to be relocated based on, I think, a little bit about the conditions of the building, the fact that the county doesn't own it, right? And I think we found 2 or 3 locations where they can be spread out throughout other county-owned facilities to make that, right? I think when they move to the government operating center, the servers are moving. So I think you're already on your way there, right? So to me, that's a no-brainer. That building has got physical issues.
No.
I mean, that's a
very old problem.
Yeah.
And I think the complexity that gets involved here, which I know we're going to talk about later, is it is amongst all the other urgent problems that we have to deal with, bridges and roads and all that kind of stuff. So we have to have this comprehensive plan of, you know, how urgent is urgent when we say it in this document, you know.
The idea that district attorneys in multiple buildings right now is an obstacle. They want proximity to the courthouse as well. So the challenge has been, again, the square footage challenge of what's available. If you want to divide them up and put them in multiple buildings, that's an opportunity. There isn't a building to purchase, there's not a building of any size where they can be consolidated right now. And I guess we call it walking distance, but we're seeing that as like maybe a quarter mile. Right, but I think it was also identified as 1.3 city blocks. So I'm not quite sure if that meets that criteria, but when Des Moines did provide their analysis, there wasn't space available to consolidate them all in one. So they're not ideally in the place where they are, where at work it's meeting a short-term need. I will say that we also thought between the district attorney and the DA, they both requested, you know, they're both going to have staff changes. So whatever challenges they have right now for space is going to be, it'll be somewhat compounded by the day and staff. One of them was wondering if they could give up some meeting rooms to convert them to offices, and then they would just be more shared meeting rooms. They're making those kinds of decisions, at least in their questionnaires.
Just one observation, so not exactly study, but just to the availability of for sale properties. I mean, I think one of the things that we've been aware of, certainly as we think of it in relation to temporary and emergency housing, as we're looking at hotels and motels, is that properties are being sold without ever coming on market. So this is one of the things that in several meetings we've discussed, the idea of being, and I guess this was
depth and scope of being able to identify appropriate properties within an area that we're looking, and then actually to be able to approach owners who don't have properties on the market, which is, I think it's just going to have to be a tactic we take, because we see time and time again properties being sold. We see the change of hands, but they've never been put up for sale. So
right.
It's just, that's the market we live in.
Being proactive.
Yeah, sure. Being proactive.
That we were really just like buying house today, same thing, right? Knowing the market. I think Camoy's report at least identifies by square footage, by area, by street address, and by size what those candidates could be for you, right? So, working with a commercial real estate specialist, familiar with those properties, someone that's advocating for you.
So I haven't yet had the chance to appreciate the presentation. I haven't yet had the chance to really dig into it. But another question, and you'll remember Rob, going back to the look of space study and when the UCLEC was being constructed, we had a lot of discussion, particularly around that site and the utilization of space in that site. How deep, if at all, did you get into the UCLEC space and whether or not all the space there is being adequately utilized and whether or not there could be further consolidation? Again, I remember at the, there were extensive discussions at the time, even prior to the doors opening. And I know that there was pushback at the time.
Well, we definitely would have to engage the sheriff have more conversations about that. I don't think you're talking about utilizing the correction side.
No.
So I believe there is space in the administration side, but that would be engaging the sheriff in that conversation using more space inside there.
I think it's worthwhile, and really also understanding what the space is utilized for. In other words, how many of the offices are occupied by people who are in the office space 8 hours a day? Are there offices that are occupied by people who are on the road or who are rarely in an office environment? Again, until very recently, I had the plans, and I recall looking at all of the conference spaces, all of the office spaces, and the discussion at the time of how overbuilt the space was. I think we really do need to engage the sheriff on that side of the house, and I think at the least we need to really understand what the space is being utilized for in order to have the confidence that that it's being utilized to its highest and best use. Because it's being utilized by the sheriff, but it doesn't have to strictly be the sheriff's space. I mean, that was the conversation even as it was being constructed. And when I leave, I can provide lots of documents from the studies about all the different spaces we were talking about putting into there, and the back and forth that happened, and the extensive discussion as to how much space is on the admin side, and whether or not we can utilize it effectively. And I know that there are some, I do know that there are some programmatic concerns about certain departments or certain utilization going into a law enforcement facility, that both as it relates to security, and more importantly, as it relates to clients and users of the space. So I'm very aware of that as well. But that said, I don't think we have a good handle on how every inch of that space is being utilized. I've long wished to be a fly on the wall in there to really see the comings and goings and understand the space utilization. Again, there's quite a lot of conference rooms. There's a lot in there. that on account.
Just to the chairperson's point there, I recall very distinctly this one thing. There were two folks sharing a desk in the old jail. When they went to the new jail, they each had a 200 square foot office. Right? So, I mean, did they really need 400 square feet when they were sharing a desk?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I'd really like to take a deeper dive with the sheriff on.
Yeah.
Just a quick question about the surveys. Was there any additional information that would be helpful to us that was on the surveys that didn't make it into the report?
I'm not going to suggest anything different component or information. It was more details. So as much as I'm willing to share some, we're very incomprehensive with the details. I put a lot of thought into it. I think some of them may have been together fairly quickly. Some people weren't there by the time we walked through that. I think there was a couple of changes, a couple of departments. So we met with somebody else. And one person did a questionnaire. We met with somebody else. I think that kind of surprised a lot. Again, it took us longer, right, though, because the amount of information to gather, when we asked a question, we didn't just get a number, we got a number with an explanation, right? So we decided to document that. We're not going to just write down what we think is enough. We're going to elaborate on what we think we need. Sometimes we ask questions that would trigger other things. A couple departments had some very aggressive projections. And again, these are just projections, so it's hard to tell if they're they're going to really prove correct or not, but again, we documented those. The surveys are all available. The second document we have here.
Thank you.
Every survey in there. So again, if you want to look at those in more detail, they're there.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Okay. I see.
probably would have helped if they put up on top the project number. I see.
It's there. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stronger glasses, I guess.
We're all getting older.
Yeah, could you make the print a little bigger, please?
Okay.
Noted.
Page 37. Statement to Trout.
And this was already cleaned out, correct? This is for journaling out the project cleaned out.
Page one has.
Yeah, so yes, phase one, phase two is four.
1.1352. Page 40, open space and recreation. Page 40.
Wait. This one's new, but it's designed for 24, right? It starts in 26. So, okay, so what? This is in because we're contemplating on as a five-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
Is there backup on this? Like, where?
We put this in similar to what you've been doing with ARPA. So the idea would be ARPA would go out of existence in 2026, and this project means we have funding, be able to have funding still available.
All right. I mean, just for myself, this is really contemplating a policy position that I think we have to have a real conversation about, and the idea of continuing this kind of granting program as we're heading into potentially difficult times. And what worries me in this document as a whole, I appreciate that we have to do long-term planning, but I'm not going to be here to be held to account, but in my full tenure here, every time we pass this, somebody at some point, when I say no to something, says, but this was already approved in a capital plan. And I'm not pointing any fingers, so it's just like, I do think we have to be thoughtful about what we're putting in, whether or not we're going to actually do this. I mean, as we talk about bigger issues of recreation, I have a proposal to potentially do a Department of Recreation. These are worthy conversations, but I'm not sure about continuing the ARPA program necessarily.
And if I could, beyond that, some of these projects are, I guess you want to call them real. They've been implemented, they're started, we've got applications in on them, so, you know, the money will be spent, that's a real plan. Others are a vision, a statement, and I would like to see two separate documents. You know, one is our plan, what we're anticipating spending over the next 1 to 5 years, and the other is our wish list.
Well, that's one of the things, too, that we've been critical about this plan is that, you know, if we're to look at any given year of what we're proposing in the plan to spend, not only is it way beyond what we actually have the capacity to spend, it's not just about the fiscal capacity, it's about the real capacity to do. One thing I would say about this, you know, we have had a tradition, particularly as it relates to farmland protection, of providing funds for farmland protection. Again, these are worthy endeavors. What was lacking that time was any kind of competitive process. You know, a farm, as I recall, was chosen, and we funded it through resolution, but there was no outreach. So that's the other thing. Moving forward with something like this would necessitate a real, and I would hope between now and 2026 when it started, a real creation of a mechanism that's fair and robust and competitive, actually. You know, that actually
competitive but mindful of geographic diversity and critical needs and all the things you would have to check to say which things get funded and with limited funds. So I would want to know that that was happening too before we actually move forward. Again, not so much in this document, but in reality for those who are going to be voting on this project when it comes to people.
Yeah, I appreciate that comment, and yet my experience has been that many of these projects are driven forward by local advocacy, and so it's not as though we have money and we're going out and saying, who gets this? It's more people coming with needs. And so maybe we need a process that when that happens, we let people know that we're getting that kind of request and see if others have that kind of need. But it's not as though we are usually, at least in my experience, sitting with funding and then trying to allocate it fairly. It's more, can we put together funding? I'm thinking in particular the Unity Corridor Trail up in Highmount, the unique situation where there was potential to get a certain kind of funding. I don't know that it would have been applicable to other communities. They didn't come forward. So I just want to balance the idea that we are a funding source with the perception that I have from the way that maybe Unique to Trails, so others may have a different experience, but that that what the county is providing often is technical assistance in the first instance, and then some funding when we're seeking other funding. And so we have the consolidated funding appeals and so forth. I guess there's a certain sense that I have that municipalities have some obligation to bring forward their own concerns, and that we need to be equally responsive when that happens. But I think we saw with some of the ARPA funding that we had some ideas that we didn't get as much interest in, and then others that we had a lot of interest in.
Yeah, I think that's true in terms of what's happened in the past, but what this is contemplating is actually a program. What this is contemplating is saying that we are creating a source of funding and we're going to provide up to a 50% match and require a match from the municipality. So this is actually contemplating putting it out there that we have funds that we're looking to partner to utilize. So, and starting at the numbers proposed, you know, $500,000 a year over the course of 4 years.
Yes.
So,
well said.
So I think we just have to be mindful that there's the whole entire backup for that, which again, we have the time to build that out, but I just want to make sure that that happens.
Page 43, tree management plan.
So, Leonard Doyle, do you know if that replacement of the bridge includes removal of the railroad tracks, or will they be replaced?
What bridge are we talking about? I apologize.
That's okay. In the overview of the UND.
So the short answer is that the tracks for that entire section would be removed in accordance with resolution, I think it's 488, which establishes a policy for the UND corridor that says this is a parallel portion of the corridor. So we would be removing tracks essentially from High Mount all the way down through to Cable Hollow, which is by the Bel Air Day Museum.
And could I add that I think that several of those bridges are already not in place. They've already been removed through various...
Yeah, absolutely, that's correct.
Legislator Lutz?
No, I was just going to add that that resolution does state that there is a follow-up resolution to be able to do that that'll have to be submitted.
Correct.
This is an established capital project we're under design right now.
Yeah.
Page
49. The next one. It's this one. Doing that. Sorry. The two UND trail and part two.
Same response.
Yeah.
phase two corridor, we do not have funding for. We're trying to see whether or not we'll be able to get funding. There's a TAP application out for that corridor right now. That would be replacing the bridge over the Associate Creek, which is a large bridge. That was removed because it was damaged in the flood. And we're concerned that if it remained over the Associate Creek, it would damage downstream properties and other bridges. So the Public Works Department would need to remove it.
Cross-reference how many miles
that happens and compare it to what it would cost to pay out the mileage for their work-related duties when they're being called out against the cost of having a car to take home. Now, when we wrote this policy, in large part, we reasoned that in a county the size of Rhode Island, there's a real cost, and I'm on the record for many years, particularly as it has to do with take-home vehicles, patrol vehicles for the sheriff, which is a full, I appreciate, it's a whole different argument, but in no uncertain terms, those take-home vehicles, depending on where you live, could get 20,000 miles a year of commuting miles, which is a real cost. And the same would apply for vehicles, and I looked at it again, I said, Nick, this has not been top of mind for me for quite a long time, but I looked at it again and seen so many take-home trucks going to people's homes, which they're, you know, they're blacked out, but I don't know where they're going, but it would be pretty easy with even general addresses to pretty quickly come up with how many commuting miles are being put on these vehicles and to rationalize using that metric or any, but that is probably not reasonable. It is true that we have many times the amount of take-home vehicles that Dutchess County has. We got to start taking a very close look. And the reason that is relevant is when we're contemplating 20 new vehicles, maybe we need to get rid of some of the vehicles. You know, maybe we need to say how many of these vehicles. I mean, having that policy also contemplates having a fleet that you could use for several days. That if you needed it, if you're on a specific job, that policy contemplates union negotiations. Says that the policy supersedes the negotiations and must be considered in negotiations. It says it. It's all there. So I have to believe we're not following the policy, which creates a whole nother issue. But I do think we have to have a real hard look at ourselves in this regard. And it may not be exactly on, I know we're not exactly on topic with this, but since the question was asked about fleet, and I'm happy to circulate the document. If you don't have it, it's pretty easy to find online. And like I said, there may be some tweaking that's necessary to make it modern, but when I looked at it, it's pretty thorough. And even though I'm the one who put it in, you know, as you do when you write legislation, you borrow from places that have amazing legislation. So it wasn't a completely an original thought at that time, but we're talking about many years ago that this was put in, and it still feels pretty relevant. So I'll stop on that, but I do have a comment about one of the ones we went past.
Yeah, I just want to add to that you know, we're paying for the vehicle and we're still paying for gas, which we could probably track if they had the county credit card for gas, so that would help us determine how many miles are actually part of commuter miles to and from the employee's home versus, you know, being called out during the evening or whatever off hours, right? And so we're paying for gas, we're paying for the car. And if we were just doing reimbursement, we'd be giving them per mile, you know, and it'd be cheaper.
And in very limited circumstances.
In very limited circumstances, right? So I agree 100% with the chair that, you know, the take-home policy should really be scrutinized and looked at. We'll save the county literally millions of dollars over the course of this capital project if we can get a little bit tighter on how many vehicles we're being allowing employees to take home if they're not needed.
Thank you. And I'm certainly not aware of the reasons why vehicles go home, but is public transit ever an option for the workforce that are now taking vehicles home, or could that potentially be an option? Could there be an option where transit is expanded such that it would serve the workforce, the county workforce, as well as
So my understanding that one of the reasons that vehicles might go home is so that there's a reliable vehicle in case there is a call during the night, which I think is can be relevant. And I just also question the assumption that we save a lot of money by paying mileage on these cars. Part of what I've understood is that if we are using a county vehicle and therefore the vehicle is being maintained by the county, that the costs are lower than actually the reimbursement mileage. If that's not correct, then you know, we should know those numbers. But I think there is a potential cost savings when we maintain the vehicles rather than use a standard rate that's based on commercial servicing of the vehicles. And I'm just also not sure if this is a county fleet question as well as a DPW question.
Yeah, so this project is a county fleet project talking about replacing aging vehicles. And, you know, I don't think we need to, my point is really that we don't need to muse about what costs more, we need to just do the math. You know, and if right now we have employees with take-home vehicles who do not have logs of how many times they're called out when they're home, because the commute you don't get reimbursed for, and in Ulster County the commute can be very long. I put tens of thousands of miles on my car going back and forth to here because I live far away from here. So the idea that if there isn't a log, if a person with a take-home vehicle does not have a log that says I was called out from home X amount of times, then we're just operating in like the theoretical, and that is not okay. You know, the commute is never reimbursed, so the idea is you come in or you come to a central place to get your vehicle if you really need that kind of vehicle for your job. Like, those are all things that are spelled out in that policy that I hazard a guess cannot possibly be being followed with 98 or whatever take-home vehicles. And this isn't just about DPW. There's other departments that I'm frankly flabbergasted of so many take-home vehicles. It's kind of shocking.
They are paying for their commute.
Yeah. And we're paying, and the cost of the vehicle, like we're paying for their commute, but also the cost of the vehicle when we routinely replace vehicles based on mileage. If you live in a place where you could reasonably be putting 15 to 18,000 miles a year in commuting miles on the vehicle, then in X amount of years, your vehicle is finished that much more quickly versus you putting that mile on your vehicle and then taking the county vehicle for the duties during the day. I think we've got to get tough on this. I think it's gone on too long, falling outside of an existing policy that is not being followed. And to my fellow legislators, you may want to consider, I don't even know, if you reaffirm a policy that should be being followed, I don't know what you do when a policy is not actually being followed. I have a guess it's not, because I don't think there could be this many take-home vehicles. And I don't want to say it, but we can talk to the fleet manager, but I suspect that there aren't logs. The policy requires that if you have a take-home vehicle, it should be a log right now. So every person with a take-home vehicle should right now be able to provide a log of how many times they're called out. And I'm just going to say, since most people don't even have seen this policy, haven't looked at it in the research, that it's not likely that the people who have take-home vehicles will readily have logs. But if without a log, you don't have the information about whether or not they actually need the vehicle. And the policy allows for some latitude. It's not strictly a numbers. The number analysis is the baseline, but there is a carve out for those who receive X amount of emergency calls. Those kinds of things factor in as well. Again, it's a very thorough policy that took months to craft and many months of debate and quite honestly, as the author, the reason it was called the Charlie Buttigieg policy is that it was really a bipartisan effort. I mean, you were there, and I believe you were probably there too. So I just think we have to look at it again, and we have to
And I think this administration is open to it, as well as my initial conversations with the executive. She hasn't seen it yet, but I think this administration is open to it, maybe in ways that previous haven't been.
Thank you. And I've worked in several government organizations, and there are times where it is discretionary. We're going to have a major snowstorm, so take the plow home so that you can get back into work. But I had a case myself where I ended up with a flat tire. Well, you can take the vehicle, but you need to compensate for the gas that's being used. So I think that would be a question as well, if they're using a vehicle to commute back and forth to work, which is not reimbursable under guidelines. It's only once you get to work, if you're using your personal vehicle or you're driving it, then there should be a fringe benefit that's applied through the personnel department that would be taxable, because it is. But then we have to decide if we want to add that benefit on, and why not all employees. What is the criteria for that?
Can I hear that there is?
Can I speak up? PPW staff or the only staff will take a vehicle that you can tax.
Why?
I don't
know if that is
right.
You're the only. Why is can we get an answer? Since they're using it to commute, it is compensation, and that would apply to all departments. It would apply to all employees to take home vehicles. And I realize some of these employees are in duly elected. We know that there's a sheriff and the DA's office both have vehicles. But again, my long-standing vocalization, which I can tell you the arguments against that have been raised against the proposition of not allowing for somebody to take home vehicles, patrol vehicles, but patrol vehicles very, very well might be our most expensive vehicles. When you're talking about highly specialized vehicles, specialty packages, and if you're putting X amount of miles with the argument that you might be called out on your way home or on your way back, which is, what I have said for now 17 years is, okay, so provide me, that's fine, provide me the data that shows how many times they are called out. 17 years, I don't have data on that. So, again, you're the wrong people to be talking about this, but anyone with a take-home vehicle probably, I would have to guess, would need, it shouldn't be just DPW that has this fringe, to be everyone with a take-home vehicle, but that's not my aim, to get everybody's fringe marked down. Well, that's the first step. It's really to analyze whether or not we need to have so many take-home vehicles. And you know what, in a county this size, we may need, especially for a department like DPW, you may need another place to put pool vehicles. It may be that this isn't, or the central garage isn't the place for all of them. You have to analyze where all the employees are, right? Like that's why we have data, so that you can say, okay, I've got six people in the southern edge of the county, three of them need trucks. They don't need to drive all the way here to get a truck. You can place the trucks at X site or whatever the.
This is going a little far afield here. Let's try to rein back into questions about the central motor vehicles itself. Discussion on that. Let's have that. If not, this separate issue needs to be looked into. Sounds like the exec site got it. And we can revisit that again. And anybody else? The vehicle part?
Okay.
And the vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say that it's like for 2024, we're talking about $2.5 million capital project of new vehicles, right? So if they're big trucks, I mean, we don't need to get into the detail right now, but that's why I think it is important for us to talk about it and really just to raise. We don't have to get any more into the weeds right now, but you know what I'm saying? That I think that this, when we're just doing this as an automatic, when it hits X amount of miles, again, when I say never that high, I'm assuming there's going to be some heavy equipment in there, probably. I don't know. You're saying
electric vehicles.
There's another capital for that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so this is what, just a lot of cars?
Replacement vehicles.
now we're not adding to the fleet.
Right, but what I'm definitely saying is that maybe we need to get our that maybe we need to really, which is good. And the reason I'm saying that is that when it comes to vote on this, this is going to be a point of contention for me in the budget, and it's not because of any newsworthy item. It's because the news pegged my reminder of the policy, which I think we got to have a real conversation about.
Yes. I worked for several state and the thruway agencies for 34 and a half years. They wrestled with this question a multitude of times. They have policies. There's no reason for us to recreate the wheel. And yes, there is a benefit to the employee for commuting, and that goes on your W-2. So, I mean, it's a lot more simple than we're making this out to be.
Yeah, just went through a little background while we were discussing this, and I found a report from 2013 where there was a total of 81 take-home vehicles, 41 were the sheriff, and the next big hitter was DPW with 26. So, I mean, that's our bulk, right? It's the sheriff's department, DPW. This is 2013, 10 years ago. I don't know what that number is today, but, I mean, we can use that kind of like a basis of where we are today to see what happened over the course of 10 years to either increase or decrease that number. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that we should move on, but I want to flag that if we are replacing with electric vehicles, that our maintenance costs are going to be quite a bit lower than if we were paying mileage. And I think that, and I've spoken with the chair about making a requirement that if there's a take-home vehicle, that it be electric. And that would allow us to see where we have deficiencies in our charging infrastructure, if we have it, and so forth. And I think that would be happy to revisit the policy with that in mind.
Thanks. Just the resolution this mentions 100-2023. I believe is not correct. That resolution is about culverts on the mountains for the lake.
So Elizabeth Street is contemplating that we're going to spend $790 next year, $650 the following. That's the proposal of us funding the construction through a partnership with a not-for-profit. Is that
it currently is written as us being a partner with a not-for-profit, and then the dollars the county share, $500,000 from the city, $100,000 from the state.
So, I guess if it's $1 million in county share, why does the $790 and the $650 is the $500 from the city being given to us, and then we're giving it to them?
$790 to $660. So on the next page, that $790 to $660 is still in balance. The $790 is $500,000 in the other.
Okay.
Then $100,000 in the state. I just applied it to the first year. In this case, there's no particular reason.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
And again, is someone working on language for a clawback if the project doesn't move forward? It's a very lackluster response. I'm not really sure what any of them. I don't know. I asked for it, and I don't. I'm just making sure that it's going to be in there. I don't know what the timeline's going to be, but basically, what I want to be assured of is that if we commit the property to a not-for-profit and they sit on it, there needs to be a time by which, if they're still sitting on it, that we take the property back. So that's going to be a real thing in writing.
Okay. 881, County Storage and Warehouse Facility.
Sure, this was the capital that was approved at the last meeting. It was approved for $1.4 million. The sale price was approved for $1.4 million. And this was, this capital was for $1.7
Are you anticipating a $300,000 investment then in the property after the purchase? No.
If there needs to be an improvement.
If there's improvements in the facility afterwards, it would be a different capital to be for the purchase.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. 84, courthouse patient.
Page 87, Department of Location. Page 90, Development Court, LED Electric Lander.
87, I think. She was distracting me.
99, okay. 93, DSS basin restoration.
And
is that ongoing?
Yes.
So is mine. 96 elevator modernization project.
Yes.
Yes. The employees appreciate that.
99 facility improvement program. Oh. 102 fairground improvements. 105 fire alarm and access control.
'Can we go back just a little bit?
Uh-huh.
Fairground improvements.
Yep.
Where are we? I mean, when does the lease run out for the Agricultural Society?
I believe it was just renewed in 2020.
For 1 year, though.
5 years.
We
do 5 years.
Oh, because we used to do 5 years, but now we do 1 year at a time. We were.
No.
We do it every year, but we make it 5 years.
We did five, and they wanted every year to increase to do a new 5 year. So we always do 5 years.
Okay. Negotiate every year on 5 years.
Because they want to always have a 5 year.
Right.
Okay.
All right. 105, anything on the fire alarm? Yes. 108, DPW geothermal at Broadway. 111, Boca Hill water tanks.
111, can we go back to the geothermal at Broadway? Yeah. Is that $3 million next year in 2025? $3 million?
Yep.
That's correct.
Is that cost effective?
Well, we only have this section here. We had a the way this is broken out right now. We had a an earmark that we would apply for about 1.5. The legislature gave us the authorization for applying for an EDA grant, so that's in for that amount for the $3 million. So hopefully, that gets funded, and it's. And the county cost goes significantly less.
To $2 million, but again.
No, the county cost would go to almost zero. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000 for the money that you've already spent on the design work. That grant would cover 80 or 90% of the cost.
So the county share would be covered by a grant to $2 million in 2025?
Well, we don't know yet, but if the grant is approved, the answer is yes.
Okay, so either way, though, I mean, that seems to me, for a building that size, to be an awful lot of money to pay for.
Of course, you don't read.
Yes. I don't think it does now. Yeah. It also applies to the green retrofit of the parking lot, which is also helps us
more in the building cost
with the geothermal work because of the need to save the parking lot and have to use the geothermal. So we're hoping that, you know, it covers a substantial portion of the cost.
Okay.
Thank you. Chair, can I ask you a quick question? Are any of the capital improvement projects that were suggested in the space analysis actually in our capital improvements budget?
Yes.
Okay.
The DPW facility improvement program.
The facility improvement program.
Okay, thank you. With that, the plan is to make those projects specific next year, but currently we didn't have the study back yet.
That's what I was wondering, the timing of taking back the end and how much would it intend for where we were going to go up with.
Okay, more to come forward.
Thank you.
Thanks. Will this water tank project be able to fulfill all the foreseeable uses of either county or county partnership projects up on Golden Hill for the foreseeable future? I'm thinking of the housing development there.
So, I'm sorry, one more time. I apologize for not paying attention. I wish we had make sure my answer report is correct.
Will this supply all county purposes up on Golden Hill plus county partnership purposes like the housing development up there for the foreseeable future?
The water tank will. The water tank is in fairly decent shape, so that's why it's pushed out in terms of when it needs to be fixed. But the water tank is appropriate for all of the uses that are contemplated and currently utilized in Golden Hill, including the proposed housing project. The difficulty that we have is we are a, what they call a consecutive system, also the Kingston system, and there are improvements that are needed to the Kingston system in order to make a more resilient system on Golden Hill. That process is now being worked through with the Golden Hill developer and the city of Kingston. But frankly, absent those approvals, you don't need to think about what other kinds of approvals that we may have to do to the city of Kingston system to make sure our system is resilient. The Kingston system is currently served. We pump out of a tank on Marriott Street, it goes up to our tank. That tank is filled by a pump station on Glen Street, which no longer functions. So that tank is now being filled by gravity on Glen Street. So the real concern is that do we have enough water to fill the city tank that we can pump out of, given the existing uses on Golden Hill and given the new uses. So that's the conversation that's taking place right now. But from a resiliency standpoint, regardless of whether the project, the affordable housing project is filled, we need to think about what we would may want to do in order to improve, make sure our systems are resilient. I'm not sure that it's the county's responsibility to do that because the city hasn't agreed with us to supply it.
It looks like it doesn't look great. It looks like
14 is the government operations center.
Mm-hmm.
117 is for preservation. On 20 HVAC modernization for DPW.
I'm going to come back and call me when you, or text me when you get there.
123 Slate over.
Sorry, I'm going to ask a quick question about grants. So, Dr. Goodall, I appreciate you giving that information about the grants, and I think that would be helpful moving forward. I see in a couple places that it says grants are possible, but I think the more that we know that grants are possible for some of these projects, the easier I would feel that you would just educate them, but it makes me feel a little bit more. I think there's a possibility that we're not having to put them over.
If I could just follow up on that question, and this is off track, I'm sorry, but I had assumed that when we hired Christine Wilson, because she's an amazing that's what we were using it for, and she said, no, I'm a planner. So have we fulfilled those two positions for grant writers? Sure, we've advertised for those two grant positions. We had two candidates that we were made offers to, and unfortunately both of those individuals had to decline the positions, one for relocation purposes and the other one for daycare needs. So at this point, those two positions unfortunately are vacant. We are currently re-canvassing, and we've re-advertised those positions, but obviously we're disappointed that we're unable to get those two positions hired.
Can I ask you a quick question on that? So are we 100% committed to this being a full-time position or two positions? Have we thought about working with grants consultants, which as a nonprofit operator, I've worked with consultants who have been great because you pay them for, you know, X amount of hours per month, and you get your work out of them, and I have people in mind that I could share with you if you would like to pursue that path.
I'll answer the question, Mr. Pitt. As it's currently envisioned, the 2024 County Executive's recommended budget contemplates having both of those as full-time positions currently.
Thank you. So I do want to say that we are absolutely using the talent that Kristen brings to the office. So we wrote, the planning director, I wrote some of the material for the earmarks that were available from Congress, whether Congress ever gets its act together, they don't know. But then Kristen has done some of the work with the geothermal work. She had really excellent contact within the city of Kingston where that one project was. We're also looking at the legislature going to be considering a resolution relative to additional grants that may be available. We met this morning to discuss something called the TAP grant at the county level. And we also are in discussions with respect to a lot of the money that's coming through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, otherwise known as the bill. So we have an ongoing meeting in the county planning department relative to these types of grants that are available to us. I would say this, that we need to think, I would ask the legislature to think of a better way to essentially allow the administration to apply for grants, given where we are in terms of timing, the need to get grants, the need to go through a substantial amount of effort in order to solidify the grants, and then on top of that, where we are in terms of a legislative process to allow us to apply. I would ask, please find a way that programmatically would allow us as a county executive to essentially submit these applications, and I would suggest that we do it on a programmatic basis, allow us to submit the applications, and then file the grant with the chair, or file the grant with the legislature. It makes us very nervous to essentially look at a grant application, not know whether there's a resolution required, and you get to the end of the grant application process and it says, are you authorized to do A, B, C, and D? Clearly, on grants.gov, the folks that are filling this out don't have that authorization. You can argue that it rests in the charter somewhere, you can argue this, but we're scrambling to get resolutions in to make sure that when we get to an end of a grant application, that we can honestly answer that question. And for me, and I think for my staff, and even for a grant writing position that you're proposing to hire, that's not a way to do business longer term.
Thank you.
Okay. 126, the pump house control.
Well, you skipped the whole one.
I got a real quick question on the solar. Dennis, Planner Doyle, do you know that solar installation on Paradise Lane, right? How does that compare to the one up on the old landfill, size-wise?
I would say the one on the old landfill is about 1.8 megawatts. The one that we're looking at Paradise Lane is somewhere in the neighborhood of 7.5 to 8 megawatts.
Now, is that because there are more dense solar panels?
No, that's because we can cover more land. There's about 20-some acres of land compared to... They are more efficient.
More efficient, I was thinking that.
But not four times.
Not four times.
The good news is that, as we found out with the project on Golden Hill, is it looks like the county would be eligible for the tax credits, which means that when you're looking at this, there is an eligibility here. In terms, when you turn the page, you can see there's an eligibility for tax credits in the neighborhood of between $4.5 and $5 million on the tax credits for that.
Yeah, the way this is presented is a little, I don't think he's printed correctly, because I don't think the engineer is going to cost $14.5 million. I think that's construction, maybe.
Yeah, that's correct.
So that should be changed. I mean, I would love to be an engineer where I'm getting maybe $14.8 million.
You have to drop out of the legislature.
Yeah. Or at least abstain.
Thanks. I know that this has obviously been the subject of much discussion in this body. I don't remember us as a legislature necessarily coming to a conclusion that we should use 20 acres for solar as opposed to any other purpose necessarily. And where have those discussions happened in the administration? And is this you bringing that to us now, basically?
So we've had some discussions with respect to the need for solar on the building itself and what the rooftop solar can talk about. The other discussion has to do whether or not what additional uses we can use for that particular site. We took a look at the availability of the land out there for additional uses, and the thought was is that even with using those types of acreage out there for the solar project, there are still places available for other types of county uses, and we've maintained, from a design perspective, looking at this, we've asked this to be essentially thinking about the frontages on Charity's Lane and over on 299, that they may also be available for future development. So the thought being is that we can use that interior of the site. And some of the areas in the back of the site which are associated with wetlands, which are not conducive to development of the type that we were talking about. I think everyone is of the opinion that we're not going to do housing on it. So that's the discussion we're having right now.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, legislator?
Yes, thank you.
All right. 126 comments? Okay. 129 replacement? That 132 solar array site project. That 135 Street Harbor office building repairs. That 138 requested geoprints.
24.
What
is that 800,000
for the UCLEC
energy upgrade?
That's the boiler replacement at UCLEC.
That's the boiler.
We actually just got the damn plant signed today. So we're preparing to go out to bid.
This makes our executive very happy. No. Sorry. I'm with her. And then 2025, the $2 million? More boilers?
It's a small project.
Oh, this is all the boilers?
All, yes. There's three.
Yeah. So we had approved 2 or 3 years ago for at least one or two of the boilers, and we also brought gas out, natural gas out, too. So,
yeah, but that was part of this capital. That project was part of this capital. It
takes a long time.
It's too long.
That's a huge project.
141, water and sewer line for Dawson.
So
this project, are we, is this a max that we feel we can contemplate right now? Are we max for the EV charging stations based on the funding sources available, or are we proposing doing the maximum possible, or where are we at?
Yes, we have five projects going right now that are in different stages.
Okay.
Probation, DSS, UCLEC, UCAT, and
Health Department. Rail Trail.
Are we thinking at all, or is anyone studying geographically diversifying charging stations as we contemplate transitioning to electric vehicles? Would we want charging stations, county charging stations in the southern part of the county, or is it more
right now we're concentrating on places where we have the need for fleet charging as well as public charging, but like Probation has only has one, I think, one station right now with two heads, and they're getting more electric vehicles, so that's a priority. DSS as well.
And these are not the slowest trickle chargers. They're somewhere between the slowest charge and a supercharger.
The level two.
Thanks for following up on Trevor Tells there. Have we contemplated, as we transition here out of fossil fuels into whatever great unknown, we're putting electric charging facilities here on county property. We don't have too many fossil fuel filling stations on county property. Like, we have a couple, but that's not mostly where we're getting our energy from. So now we're going to be filling up our cars with energy on county property more so, not just for our fleet, also possibly for the public. There's that piece of it. So then there's a piece of what's happening in to the service stations around the county. And also, well, everything that entails, I guess, we had a discussion around that, and the fact that we're also creating generating capacity, like at Heritage Lane, which we don't own any fossil fuel assets directly, at least that I'm aware of in Ulster County, but now we're going to own some energy generating facilities. Like, where's the larger conversation about that?
So let me take some of this, let's say, if I can. One is that, so this has been an all hands on deck kind of process relative to local governments, county governments, state governments, and the federal government. And there are a myriad of programs that are out there that are invested in charging stations. One is something called the NEVI program, which is identifying what they call major commuter corridors, and then are basically providing funding to put charging stations within those major commuter corridors. So that's the Thruway in Ulster County, it's US Route 209, it's the park and ride facilities, etc. So that's one way that we're looking at this from a holistic standpoint. Well, all the way down the other way at local government level, most local governments, indeed, I think nearly all, and certainly from the county planning board's perspective, our recommendations for new construction when you're looking at stand times within parking lots that are over an hour, that at least 10% of that project, essentially the parking lot, has the availability of EV charging stations. We're seeing this throughout the county. Every time a project comes in, we're putting that in. And then what ends up happening is not only is it 10%, but also there's another, the conduit and everything else is in for up to 20%. So you're trying to essentially move that along. I would say the really difficult problem that we're having is on the larger vehicles. Your bus fleets and your heavy vehicles take a different charging infrastructure in order to work. That means that you have to have a substantial investment in transformers and electrical infrastructure. That investment is extremely expensive, and currently one of the things I think is of significant concern for those types of investments is transformers or lead times are out over 2 years. So you actually get the material to actually make the investment. That's a discussion that's ongoing as we look at the electrification of bus fleet, where those bus chargers are out there. It's also of significant concern to school districts because they're trying to electrify their bus fleet as well. So all that discussion around where vehicles are parked and housed, as you move to electric fleet, then you start to think about when you house those vehicles, where can we house them? That starts to think, for me, it starts to think about a lot of partnership agreements and memorandum of understanding so that we can take advantage of that infrastructure that's going to have to be installed at the local level in their garages, at their facilities, et cetera, et cetera.
The only question I'll have there is, so the design is $158,000 out of a roughly $400,000 construction cost. But if you look back at the Perry Lane one, you're talking $300,000 for design for a $14.5 million project. But the number don't scale. That's just, is it correct one?
I think Paradise Lane is ground mounted, so they're individual small foundations. This is rooftop, so they have to analyze whether the existing roof can take it, and then design the steel and whatever that has to carry that load onto the roof. So there's a lot, I believe there's a lot more work in engineering.
Is that the answer? Good point. Thank you.
Yeah, I
think.
Yeah.
Also, the interconnection with the existing electrical system for the UCAP facility and coordinating with the ongoing build-out of the charging infrastructure. So that was more engineering.
151, Crisis Stabilization Center.
Thanks. So does this mean this looks like it's going to be open sometime next year? Because I see zeros after that.
I can give just a look. No.
Go for it.
No, you go ahead. I want to hear what you have.
Okay.
The answer is yes.
So the Crisis Stabilization Center bids for construction opens on Thursday, 26th of October. This project falls under the WICS law. It's going to be over $500,000. We have that all prime contractors, essentially. So we won't know final numbers until Friday. And they're building out the first floor, renovating the first floor. We're hoping that it's open and done, finished ready by June.
So the 2.579 that we've programmed for, is that going to cover what the bid is? I mean, what did the bid come in?
They haven't come in yet.
Oh, it just went out?
Yeah.
Okay. Thursday. They're coming in on Thursday.
Okay. In on Thursday. All right. To be determined.
Can you get the geothermal thrown in that bid?
Yeah.
Mm.
All right, 154, rest of the housing.
Chair, can I give just a little update on this? So, there's a lot of conversation right now about funds available for two respite houses, which is what's called for in the resolution. When Legislator Walter and I did the initial numbers on this, it was a couple years ago at this point, and we did work closely with People USA to look at the numbers, but now they don't seem to be in sync anymore with the possibility of two respite houses. So the conversation is looking like it may be one respite house, and there's even also conversations about the possibility of maybe using these funds for something other than respite houses, because there's a respite house down in Walden that is underused, and they are expanding their services to become an 8-bed respite house, and they are actually open to Ulster County residents. So that's part of the conversation. So I think that this is a little in process right now. I do think that we should keep this as a placeholder until we can solidify the decisions on this, and I'm working with Deputy Executive Contreras on this, and can give you a more full report. as we progress along.
158, Route 28 Water and Sewer Extension. Route 61, Brown Fairbury Commons.
Sorry, can we go back to the Route 28?
Yeah.
Thanks. The last time I heard about the housing project up there, I heard like late 2025 opening. That none of that delay, as far as we know, has to do with us, the speed at which we're moving on this, does it?
No. Right now, I believe RUPCO has acquired the site, and I think they have solidify their funding. Don't quote me on that. And I know that I have an easement request to essentially, there's land that the county owns around the traffic circle. A sewer line will run across that. I will be submitting that resolution for legislative consideration for December. And I know they're working under permits to get the water under the New York State Thruway. So it's moving ahead.
Do we have a sense, what's the update on Silver Gardens? Is it realistic that this one is going to extend to 2024?
They were funded, so they're pulling building permits. They should be in the ground by spring. Start to be in the ground by spring.
157,
this seems to be like, I guess we can't undo a capital. Is this really a capital project? Or this is one of those things that because of ARPA, the way we were initially putting ARPA projects in as capitals when they weren't really capitals, and we get rid of this one person, correct?
It's not a person, it's actually just the one.
Or this is the whole program?
This is the program.
Okay.
Correct.
And was it part of this $10 million grant funding through Enterprise Drive? Through iPart?
No.
No.
No, no, no.
Okay. All right. So this is the program manager and the program.
The two resolutions that the legislature considered, one for CLP and the one for
Got it.
Thank you. 170, ARPA water and sewer infrastructure.
Shouldn't this one be closed? We did our phase one. I think Asofis was the only phase two, and we still had leftover money, but we weren't planning on phase three.
This is the water and sewer budget that you're talking about. So the contracts have all been sent out and signed at this point. Is that correct? Have all the water and sewer? You know, I have to get back to this. I don't know if all of them have actually been out and signed and back. I think we're still very early in the process of getting any sort of invoices back from. This is a reimbursement program, so
we receive no expenses.
Right. So as we pay that out, we'll expect all that by the end of 2024.
What's the first one?
We were the first one to apply.
It was the notice of interest.
Oh, gotcha. So we could potentially take 500 to date and move to. So you're saying that you wrote, when you wrote to date, you were actually not writing to date, you were guessing to date?
Some of them are actuals, and some of these that are projects that are in the woods that we're expecting additional costs. We're going to write that in as well.
Okay.
And in truth, some of this could actually shift to 25, correct?
The money has to be allocated by
26. No, allocated by 24 and then expended by 26.
Right. 173,
questions, especially in Denning, about whether or not this money that's programmed for 2025 is going to be sufficient for us to really do matches on broadband monies that may be coming from state and federal sources, and also whether there's any possibility of moving that into 2024. I guess that'd be a question for Director Doyle.
So, this is firmly what I would call a lag. In that we do not know what the state program, which is called Connect All, looks like for broadband right now. The report was just released. And what I would say is that all broadband providers are eligible to apply in and of and by themselves. So we now have, we're aware of at least three, if not four, broadband providers which may apply. One is Margaretville Telephone. The other is Spectrum itself. The other one is Archtop. And then there's a third which is now providing broadband experiences in authorities looking to expand into New Paltz and Kingston. I believe it's called Planet. So that, all of the, what we're trying to do is we had an estimate, and it was a back-of-the-envelope estimate to build out the unserved areas in Ulster County from Charter Communications of about $7.8 million. Took 10% of that estimate and said, well, we may be able to use that as the match. I am firmly of the opinion that this is a lag. The $100,000 that you talked about is something we've had a conversation with the chair of the ARPA committee, and the idea would be to potentially provide small grants to establish Wi-Fi hotspots in public spaces and public areas. We've been working with the controller in terms of this discussion. The idea was to get libraries, parks, town halls, and other places where we would actually put some infrastructure in so you have Wi-Fi hotspots in those areas. Typical grants are somewhere between $1,000 to $7,000, and that's what this would be done. And we intend to make that presentation to the ARPA committee the next time it meets.
Yeah, this Wednesday.
So that's what this is about. The 7.8 is literally a placeholder from my perspective. So the legislature was aware that we were trying to find the ability to have some money available for broadband, should we get asked.
Thank you. So in these reviews, and this is to the Senator Crystal, will we be looking at the ability or the plans to actually do some of this work? Because I have a gut feeling that people like Spectrum, they'll be a little slow, right, to actually execute and build, whereas the Archtop is actually doing it as we speak. They're laying fiber today, right? I mean, do we give a priority in that way when we're allocating these funds if they come in for the grant?
I'm going to let Dennis Archer go take this.
So, the $100,000 that we're talking about is probably the areas that already have broadband service, but they don't have Wi-Fi.
The big projects.
They don't have service. The idea of essentially the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, which has allocated the funds to the state for broadband, that's a state decision in terms of who they fund. Those applications are likely to go in from all of the various people that I just mentioned. We do have some great little companies that have been operating in Ulster County, including Margaretville Telephone, which has extended broadband all the way down Route 28 and extended broadband into Phoenicia. A lot of these companies are looking at this as, at least in my opinion, they're looking at this as being able to essentially compete much more effectively in the fiber realm, where essentially the Charter communication is still coax based. So you have to think about this as being fiber to the home, where 1 gig is possible, speeds of 1 gig are possible, and the lack of maintenance on those types of things. So and the installation costs. What we're hearing from all of the people is that the real difficulty is what they call the main grading cost, which are attachments to Central Hudson poles, which are expensive and time consuming with respect to the permits. So I think the universe of broadband is going to change relatively rapidly in the next 3 to 5 years. The real question is, can we get up into the Cherry Valley, Samsonville area, up into Denny? Can we get into those areas that are unserved? The state is going to make sure that if they're going to give money to somebody, that they're going to do that unserved area. But we're likely to have a lot more competition in what it now in the county is literally a single provider.
Thank you.
So the question about the timing, is there any chance that New York State will receive these funds and we will need to be ready to spend funds to help bring that in 2024?
What we're hearing from the Connect All folks is that they intend to essentially release funding end of 24 into 25, 26. That's what we're hearing. I think it's trying to remember the amount of money that the state got, but it's not significant compared to what the gaps that are likely to occur. I would say that.
Thank you.
If I may, Chair, I just want to give everybody a sense of the amount of unserved areas in the county that we have. When we look at what's out there from, and you should know that the administration has been on top of this, challenging the FCC map. We've submitted challenge maps to the federal government. And with all of that, you have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 2,100 to 2,500 structures total in the county, somewhere around 3% of the total structures in the county that are unserved. So we're going through a definition of what constitutes underserved, with the original definition being 100 megabytes per second up down, and now we're talking maybe 300 is what we're going to have a conversation about in terms of what constitutes underserved areas.
I'm sorry, I had to step up for a minute, but I also just want to acknowledge the aspect of this program that's going to help fund hotspots in public space is pretty critical as well. You know, for people who don't have access right now at their homes or whatever, where this is going to take time to roll out, being able to go to a public space, not a private shop where you have to buy a coffee and you can sit there for 2 hours. I mean, even in my district, I know there are spots where there, I had a friend who was in a spot without the ability to have Wi-Fi, and every morning for work, she would drive halfway down the mountain on a hairpin turn and stay parked off to the side, do her work for 2 hours, and then head back up. So just making it accessible, and even with these sort of what I would call micro grants, but really getting the reach out in not just public spaces, but you contemplate Main Street. So maybe someone sits on a bench, but they know that they can get free Wi-Fi. It's huge.
Yeah, and my original telephone provided free Wi-Fi to Panika Main Street. So, and one of the things that we're looking at is obviously, it makes sense from a availability standpoint in terms of general availability. It also makes sense to fund those folks that have generators so that they're available during emergencies as a source of information. I would say that I'm a lot smarter when I copy somebody else's work, so this was done in Dutchess County with some success. We've had conversations with Dutchess County, and that's where this program started.
Can I also just ask that as you roll out the program, that you contemplate signage, making sure, especially in hopes that they contemplate signage, and it's a kind of recognition, again, it's not so much about Ulster County, but just saying that this is provided to you, you know, by and through your local government. Again, I think sometimes that gets lost, and if you don't see it, you could be on Main Street and not know that you have access, especially if you're talking about someone who's going to a place to access, not with their phone, but with a device that isn't their phone. Again, we're talking about very particular needs, potentially. So I'm glad that this is here, and I think that aspect of the program is really great.
Okay, I just want to point out that we are slightly halfway through.
Okay.
All right. 77. County Road Radio System.
This is not going to be long, but I think I'm not going to be here for it, but it's shocking to see a line of a zero. So when we get there, it's going to be like, wow, we're not spending any money on countywide radio.
I'll take a picture for you. Show you the zero.
31.7 to get there.
180 mobile command.
It's your feet.
I'm not moving my feet. I'm literally my feet are under the chair itself right now. I'm not touching it.
There's a wire down there that sometimes when I hit it, it makes
up. Maybe your chair. Really
just stop breathing.
I'm not touching it. Before I was. It's not like that. This has already been approved. The global command post? No.
No. Cannon mounts going.
don't mind them here right now, please.
The only question I would ask is why is it the split team? Is one is down team and the other one is the polymer seat? Why is this for 2 years? if you are mobility underprivileged, say in Ulster County, you are already subject to more tracking than people riding around in cars. And this is not an argument for this, but this is just for us to think about it in the context of surveillance generally in our county. Furthermore, if you live in certain neighborhoods of our county, like Midtown, Kingston, you could just be watched on the street. There's all kinds of cameras just on the street.
Yeah, I just want to add in that I think we need to really think about privacy policies as we move forward. I attended the NYSAC conference, and the one of the sessions was all about AI and about how AI can assist government and how it can harm government. And a lot of that conversation was about tracking and facial recognition. So I think it's an important thing as we talk about next year.
Oh, I think any parent would pay the $55,000 to track the felon that just kidnapped their son or daughter.
And I was going to say, on the school buses, I mean, it has come in when it's one kid's word against another. I have personal experience where, you know, a grandkid was getting blamed for something had it not been for that wonderful video camera. So it's going to be a tough one.
I feel like the idea of having cameras on a school bus is totally different than tracking every license plate that drives by. It makes sense to me to have, and arguably as a parent, that's maybe for parents to decide, but as a matter of policy, it's more like having Axon body cameras. This is all I'm talking about, is having a policy that relates to how long you keep the information and who we share it with. To me, they're apples and oranges. And I appreciate what Legislator Ernest said, like there's all kinds of tracking, and Vice Chair Criswell, in terms of AI, how that intersects. And that's, I guess, what I'm saying, is that things are changing very, very rapidly. And when I go in my car, I don't have the normal expectation that I'm being tracked, and that potentially that information, that tracking, could be sold to a private company, which is... that's a real thing. Like, we don't have a policy in place that doesn't allow it. We need to make sure that we have policies that are protecting privacy. In the instance of a crime, absolutely. That's arguably what it's there for. But you don't get to keep things in perpetuity and share them with whoever you want.
No, I agree. But anybody has GPS on their phone or in their car or already being tracked, they know exactly where you go, where you've been, and you have it turned on so you can figure out where you're going.
Yeah, I think the point is that we just need a policy on it.
Yeah. And law enforcement has to use means to get my tracking information. I don't like that this thing's tracking me, and actually turning it off doesn't, as you learned many years ago from the Edward Snowden documentary, you can turn your phone off and it doesn't mean you're not going to be tracked. You can still be tracked, unfortunately. But the matter of fact is, at least reasonably, if law enforcement wanted to find out where I was using my phone, they would have to get a subpoena to get my GPS records. Right now, they can use these devices and put together a tracking without my consent. And that's something that I want to make sure is actually that we have a policy in place.
You just have to wrap it in a loop.
Or is it just, or is that
design.
Do you know how you want to take them off?
All the time.
There's no construction.
So the one, the $110,000 for design.
Right.
Construction cost.
Yeah. I'm glad it's a mistake because it worries me that we're not doing it. So that's great. Thank you.
What's the reason the superstructure, substructure, and the bridge overall are separated?
Yeah, the different types of replacement and repair. Superstructure and substructure are repairs, and the bridge program are complete replacements.
Just a matter of housekeeping, some of the typos that we noted, do they get fixed with budget amendments? How does... We'll amend the actual capital project.
Well, that one, for sure, yeah. Okay.
Yep. Certainly on the bond.
Yep.
Yeah, I think in the past last year when we had some technical language changes, we did a clerical budget amendment to clean up some of the items.
Yeah, this is the sample, this is probably $1 million range.
Obviously on the money, but in some of the other items that was noted, this is the section.
There you go.
You could probably replace these 1978.
6.2 million new microphones.
There you go. 232 Pantone Killsworth.
Okay, thank you. 244 highway equipment. 7 for the Matthew Road Bridge system. $250 large culprit program. $253 Mount Marion traffic system. Why is it so
traffic lights are really turned
down? It's $207,000.
Going rate for a traffic light.
Yep.
I'll give you a little history too. That's the only traffic light that we own.
Thankfully.
Can we hire somebody to stand there and stop the traffic?
$256 payment consideration. $259 the shipper replacement.
How many bridges are there in Phoenicia? I feel like we always have replaced a couple. It's like five, right? Five. This will be the last one.
I think we voted on this one.
$252 for a way to make them vote. $265 reduction in my shoulder widening. $258 cancel the road culprit replacement. $271 Concord Bridge. $274 Sherman Bridge. Who are the people doing all these bridges in one year? For the amount of work, that's a lot of bridges.
Turnwood is in design. Turnwood is in design right now, and it's expected, construction is expected 25. Completion is expected.
Wasn't necessarily about just the one bridge, it's just a general comment. There's a lot of work being done on bridges, and we really have to be able to do all that.
So, can you speak up a bit, John?
Sorry. The question was, there's a lot of bridges in various stages of replacement or repair. Do we really have the bandwidth within the department to actually do all that?
No.
We give some in-house and others get pumped out to manage. So on average, I think we average between 4 or 5 bridges a year, either full replacement or full rehab. Sure.
Yeah, when I was going to wait for the question on the bridges, I'm happy. I think that we're contemplating additional people in the department. Great. But on the whole, I just want to sort of raise the same issue that this contemplates $109 million spending in 2024. And I guess the question that overarching question that I want to raise is how realistic is that? And the follow-on to that, and I don't expect an answer today necessarily, but the follow-on to that is last year's contemplated $85 million. And I'm wondering how much have we dedicated of that right now? Like, where are we at with that $85 million capital?
So if you look at the capital program, it'll give you the indebtedness and the anticipated capital expenditures. So you're in the $25 to $35 million range.
Right. So okay. And there's only very slightly historical. But the point being that we're at, you know, a third, between a quarter and a third, is it reasonable to suggest we could possibly get, and I'm not saying there's a different way to do this, maybe there is, and this is certainly something the planning department has brought to our attention year over year over year, but I do think it's a very, at this late hour, probably not the full conversation for tonight, but I think it's an important conversation to have, and we're proposing $109 million worth of spending, and last year, you know, we've only spent a fraction of what we proposed.
So, at some risk, the planning department, the planning board has commented repeatedly on the capital program and your ability to accomplish what was in it and what was recommended for funding. you have had in no years basically been able to spend the money that you basically recommended. And I want you to think about a capital program where effectively if you haven't started design, that by the time you start design to the time you actually start construction is 300 days. That's how long your process takes to essentially begin that work. Get somebody on board, work through the legislative process, get contracts done, and to actually mobilize is 300 days. So the good news is you have, or bad news depending upon your approach, is you have some large ticket items in this budget that are been through the design process, and you have fairly decent opportunity to spend more money than you probably spent before relative to that because of where you are in the design process. The bad news is no one wants to address the process. So there was proposed changes to the contracting process that was rejected. There literally needs to be some way, this is the opinion from the planning department, there needs to be some way to essentially regain the trust in terms of where we are, in terms of some of these larger ticket items, which are somewhat pro forma, to be honest with you, whether you're replacing air conditioning units or building buildings. You know, the idea of how you're doing that and moving that through from a design process is important. Spend your time on those things that are much more difficult, like building towers or radio systems or something like that. Not a lot of out-of-box thinking is going on with respect to your bridges. The main thing is to get it out of the floodplain, to make sure you go through the environmental review process. Consultants do a lot of work on this. DPW has a great track record for building bridges. We haven't had one fall down. We haven't had one fall back on us. And that's what you need to think about. But we have to do it better. We have to do it quicker. And there are some things we can change in terms of the bridge work. There's some things we can't change, particularly on the road work, because you need right-of-way. Right-of-way takes an enormous amount of time, at least a year, to go through right-of-way work. And design processes are taking that much longer as well, mainly because of the consultant work out here. But I will tell you that if you have $104 million, if you spend 50 of it, you'll be very, consider yourself very, very successful.
Yeah, the short answer to that is over the past 2 years, the federal allotment and state allotment has doubled from what it was in past years. So there's more money available. And these, if you look at the funding, there's a lot of green in there. And these bridges are larger bridges, and they're going to go out to contract. So it's not like, you know, the county forces, they do a lot of rehabs, they do a lot of even complete, you know, replacements, but these are all going to go out to contract. So, I mean, you just put out the RFP and you collect the, and you score it and you get it designed and then you put out the construction and spend the money. And it's relatively very little of county forces or money that goes to replacing them or rehabbing them.
That's not at all what my concern was. I mean, the bridges, as the director of planning pointed out, is to me more pro forma, thankfully, because we do a great job and I'm less concerned about that. My concern is that we continually keep putting forward capital plans that we can't and don't execute. And that this capital plan is 25% bigger than the last capital plan, which we only have executed on 25% of. This is a bigger issue than just bridges. I'd actually say probably if you go back, what we probably need to do at some point is take 2023 and cross-reference the checklist. What did we actualize? And that may be something for our finance department to do. Natalie's here, you're hearing me, but to say, project by project, where are we? And then we can analyze what the holdup. If the legislature has a role in the holdup, we have to have a conversation about it. But it may be that this isn't a realistic plan, right? It may be that this isn't, it may be fine, but again, if we consistently can't actualize, then we do have to say what's happening that we're being presented and approving $85 million and we only spend 20? Is it our capacity? Is it timing? Is it what? I mean, using your 300 days, we're proposing $11 million in construction on the government operations center. Is that realistic? Where are we in design phase? Do we have?
We should have 90% designed by the end of this month. The end of November, excuse me. So that we should be ready to go to bid in probably in
February.
That's where we're at right now. There's some assumptions there. That's where we're at. And we do have a PLA study starting as well. Thank you for that, by the way, Chair. For that recommendation. I would say this, that from my perspective, and this is my perspective only, as long as you continue to add staffing to what I would call object people that are working on a particular problem, whether it be opioids or whether it be pick those places where you've added staff, right? The thought that runs in my mind is you outrun your support team, and your support team is purchasing, it's contract management, it's all the work that the legislature has to do in order to get its comfort level around it. And there needs to be, for me, there needs to be sort of a trusted voice in all those situations. The idea, for example, that someone at the legislature, and I've been through this, and I'll vouch for what we're doing so that we don't run. I have projects that run through five committees.
Really?
Five committees. Those are the things that you should start to think about. Bridges, public works, capital project, and it goes to ways and means, and we're out of here. You know, those are the types of things that I think you have to have a look inside yourselves in terms of your process and how it works and what your trust levels are, so that you can begin to move things along in a much better fashion.
But with all due respect, can you give me an example of a bridge that was held up by the legislature?
Honestly,
like bridges, even if they go through five committees in 1 month, they move. I mean, rarely. We get criticized for not talking about bridges, and I support the idea of, like, let's move it. If you're bringing me a bridge that needs to be redone, I totally trust you that it needs, not you, but I totally trust the team that the bridge needs to be redone, and I vote yes.
So I think what you're seeing is that, yes, that's the case, but then you have to look at when it occurs in the time frame. So the example I would give you is if you miss a time frame by 5 days, you may be held up for 60, right? And those are the things that essentially, for example, if I had a bid came back in December and you don't meet until next February, think of the delay in working that through. And then think of how you're trying to, from a scheduling standpoint, you're trying to essentially make sure your bids come back in an area so that you're trying to find out where you're going to be in the legislative schedule to produce those bids, get you a bid document that you're willing to accept, go through all of that process. Those are where the times get lost. They don't get lost in terms of, as much in terms of the approval process, but they do get lost in terms of when you get bids back, how you go through that process, where they hit the calendar. And so when you're looking at it from our perspective, we're thinking about time frames when things come back. We miss a deadline at a consultant level for a week in terms of our ability to essentially make sure that we have the plans completed. That puts us off a week in the schedule, which pushes us off 60 days or at least 30 days, if not 60 days, in terms of it getting in front of the legislature. Those are really critical periods. So you don't see it so much when it comes to you. You see it in terms of all that front end that gets to you. And then the back end, once it gets to you, then we have to have the resolution has to be approved. We go through the bid documentation. It has to go to DOT. DOT has to tell us that the bids work. Then you have to go back to those are literally months of time that you don't sit. You know, and I don't. I'm not blaming the legislature. I'm certainly not. What I am saying is that we need to think about what our abilities are to move these forward. And it's really problematic. Are you willing to accept late resolutions? No, you're not. So all of those things.
We accept late resolutions every month. And we actually streamline the late process so that you can submit a late resolution, the chair approves it, and it goes direct. If it comes in time to still make it to committee of original jurisdiction, it goes to committee of original jurisdiction. It doesn't go just to laws and rules. There's almost not a month that comes where I don't approve late resolutions.
Well, there are probably explanations for everything I'm talking about, but the fact remains that it's 300 days. That's the fact.
Okay, but we do accept late resolutions, and we've made it.
I've been through the pain of late resolutions.
We've made it as functional as possible so that it used to just go to laws and rules, which meant that a committee that really generally wasn't dealing with a bridge was looking at a bridge, and instead now if we can still make it to public works, it goes to public works, even if it comes in, you know, 2 days before public works meets. So, we try to be as accommodating as possible. Again, I think that all of this needs to be worked out because we want this document, you know, with whatever exceptions, there's always going to be pushback on some individual things when we approve a document like this. Any one of us, or 10 of us, or sometimes 15 of us might not like one thing in there, but we're not micromanaging at this stage. But as much as possible, we're saying we want this to happen. We want this to be executed.
The other thing I would say is that there has been in the past sort of the idea that there are things that are wish listed here. And there are things in there that may or may not be priority, but I would say that about 90% of this capital program are things that this legislature or that this county needs in order to essentially stay current on its investment in infrastructure and its investment in buildings and assets. And that's difficult. And the other thing I would say is that remember what's happened to the cost of construction. So delays are not delays in terms of only time, it's also delays in terms of cost. And so we're seeing estimates of costs anywhere between 25% and 30% between where we were in 2020 and where we are right now. And we're also seeing delays in terms of just one year to year, 6% to 8% instead of the normal 2% to 3%. So sometimes you really need to think about where we are in terms of cost. I can tell you that The original cost for a signal was $150,000. It went to $250,000. Right now, the last bridge that got left by DOT, which is on the Brunswick Road in the town of Gardner, was $385,000 for a single signal. That bit. So that's what's happening to costs out here. So it's really problematic, and it's not going to get. It doesn't look like it's going to get better unless we don't have a federal budget. Then.
Mr.
Evans.
Well, Dennis did a lot of explaining, but the legislature is not the cog in the wheel that's slowing the process. There's a long, drawn-out process. Right away, like Dennis said, could take 18 months. I've seen it take 36 months. And the Transportation Council tracks all of that. All it is on the TIP. The state is part of the TIP process. It's not unheard of to send a set of plans into DOT and take 2, 3, 6, 8 months to have them reviewed. So that's weighing down the process, pushing it out. I mean, there's a project in the town of Lloyd that was supposed to go to, and it has federal money, supposed to go to construction in 2014. It's not going to be completed until next year. That's 9 years in the process. And it's not the legislature that's holding it up. There's many things along the way that drag the process out. And the federal government, every couple of years, actually looks into the Transportation Council's efforts and progress, and they actually grade us, and we typically do very, very well. But any Transportation Council or MPO is lucky to have 40% of their program complete in any given year. That's not a good number, but it's up from what used to be, but it's the process that's dragging it down.
I would say that
not us.
UCTC obligated 100% of its federal funds this federal fiscal year, so we've obligated 100%.
Yes!
But I would think that the frustration level that you have with respect to the time frame is shared in different orders of magnitude with those folks that are in the trenches trying to get stuff done. And you saw it with respect to the Elizabeth Manor project,
where you're looking at 2 years or 2.5 years to complete a project, which looks like it's a simple rehab, and it's not. And that's what happens to a lot of these projects. From when you get into them, the design spiral out, the environmental work spirals out, the review process from other agencies spiral out. And so maybe what I'm talking about is by the time we get to you, we're pretty frustrated in terms of what we're expecting to go through.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I understand what Legislator Litz and Planner Doyle are saying. Are you guys saying there's bureaucracy in government?
Yeah.
No, are you saying
that?
And in just one construction season, the prices went up 22%.
All right, we got to go.
Yeah. So I do, I'm sorry, Chair. I do want to say this because we finished 2019, October the 19th, we finished the Shokan Rail Trail. We've had over 1 million visitors since it opened. I will tell you that if you think you're bureaucracy, and I think we have some issues, I'm still ordering toilet paper because the city of New York can't figure out how to get toilet paper delivered to the port of Pakistan. So I can still order a toilet paper form like every 2 months. So we can have toilet paper at the facility.
All right, 277 Wolfman Bridge replacement. 280 in the stock over number 2. 283 Golden Hill Transportation Person. 286, so it's staff engagement. Shelters.
Yes.
All right. So I was hoping this would move forward this year. How's it looking for next year?
So. Bus shelters are the policy at the county level has been with respect to bus shelters that we will provide a shelter, but the community has to agree to the maintenance of the shelter. So the idea of essentially that the county is going to maintain 50 or 60 shelters around the county is just not practical. And one of the things that ends up happening is we can certainly give shelters and provide shelters to the individual communities. Finding places to put them is we need to understand what those places are. It's easy if we're talking about municipal buildings or municipal facilities. It's easy if we're talking about right-of-ways that are owned by the county or owned by the local government. Putting facilities associated with the state facilities needs right-of-way, use and occupancy permits, all of those things. And that would not necessarily fall on the county. We also transferred a substantial amount of money from the Transportation Council to help pay for these shelters. I think we transferred $600,000 in federal money for those shelters as well. But it requires a willing municipality in order for us to move forward. The policy is that essentially the municipality and or the landowner has responsibility for maintaining the shelter.
292 EV connections. You have 295 electrification. 298 fleet electrification program. 301 equipment accessories.
Okay, so Public Works has made a motion and a second to adjourn.
Hear, hear.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
It's just a record reading piece of adjourn for lack of more.
Fine with us if you stay.